Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you into Christian Worldview today. This is Dr. John Coben, your Tyranny Response Unit. Joining me in the studio, as he has been the entire week, is Rippin' Richie Williams. That's had a kind of a tongue twister,
I guess. My name is Whippin' Witchy.
Sorry about that. At any rate, upstate weather currently is in the mid-60s, depending on where you are. Only going to get up into the upper 70s today, according to the weather forecast. And in the afternoon, we're going to have a chance of thunderstorms down in Anderson. And those will be moving into the rest of the upstate throughout the evening. It's actually only a 30% chance of precipitation during the day, but it still is a possibility. So if you want to be well prepared, make sure you have that umbrella in the car and as you make your way out to work today. But what have we got lined up for today? We have some interesting themes I know to talk about. I could just start off with one. Did you see the story the other day that came up in the news in Wausau, Wisconsin, that condoms were given to middle schoolers at a school health fair? It says, some Wisconsin middle school students got to take home souvenirs from their health fair. Condoms. An AIDS education group was handing out the prophylactics at the health fair organized by North Central Healthcare in Wausau. The idea was to educate the middle schoolers on the dangers of alcohol and drugs.
Alcohol and drugs.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
They need a middle schooler?
Yeah.
Is that necessary in middle school?
Yeah, apparently so. A school district official, Robert Rindo, said administrators didn't know about the condom giveaway in advance. Organizers and teachers stopped the handouts once they realized what was happening. District officials have sent a letter to home to parents about the incident, and the AIDS Education Center has apologized. Well,
no, they apologize. Everything's okay.
Yeah, right. But, of course, everybody got the message, I guess. That it's time to practice safe sex in middle schools. Who knows?
Well, it's Friday the 13th, and that's scary. Not really, but some people think so. Friday the 13th, May the 13th, 2005. We're live from 7:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning. So if you're hearing us between 7:30 and 9 in the morning, we are live, and you can call in, be on the show, 201-6955. That's 201-6955.
Well, we had an email came in yesterday from Moise Leff. Thought I'd share this with you this morning. It's sort of a long one, but I think it's a well-placed email, so I thought I'd go ahead and have
yeah,
a shot.
Yeah, this lady's got some serious issues she's dealing with.
Which one?
The lady you're reading the article from.
Yeah, yeah, from Moise. I think Moise is a male.
Moise? I don't know. M-O-I-S-E.
It's pronounced Moise. Like easy mode.
Yeah, but the way it's spelled, it looks really close to Eloise. That's why I thought it was. I don't know.
Maybe it's a transgendered.
Transgendered. It could be.
You never know. In this day and age. Dear Dr. Coben, given that you have training as an economist, among other things, and you are willing to accept questions, I'm willing to accept questions. I beg that you can consider my situation and offer your advice. Our family has long employed a chauffeur. Perhaps you have yourself employed the domestic. You will know that it is not entirely the smooth road. The son of our late chauffeur, Samuel, we call him Sam to distinguish him from his father, he too serves us and drives well enough. The difficulty is that he seems not to know his place. We hire him and expect him to do the particular job of a chauffeur. This he does, but he also finds the other tasks he wants to provide. He thinks that by doing many tasks, he comes to have a great value. He insists on more and more pay. This, you see, becomes frightful. But to elaborate on the task, one day he decides to select a school for our children and to drive them to school himself. He insists on this and upon helping them with homework. No one else will do. It must be Sam. And what is he having them taught? As if this is any of my business, he fancies himself very close to the children and wants to be called uncle. Is this not the cheek? Then he wants to keep our books. Then he wants to keep our books. Then one day he's paying himself. Surely this is too much. It is true that we have not gone hungry, but consider our loss of control. He decides how much to spend on food, other necessities, luxuries, and even retirement funds. He wants us to change doctors, saying the doctor we now attend overcharges us. It is as if he considers the whole family to be children. But by now you must think me mad not to discharge the man, but we feel a certain loyalty after generations. There's another darker matter as well. I know for a fact that other members of his family come some generations ago, when threatened with discharge, killed their master and burned his house and raped his wife. Such a terror and this family are much alike. Though he conducts himself well enough today, how can we be sure of avoiding such fate ourselves? So, you see, our family is fallen on hard times. What shall we do? Perhaps you can help. Perhaps our tale will serve as a warning to those who keep servants to be sure to keep mastery of them. I fear we have let our own mastery elude us. We hang upon your words in hope of deliverance from a dire situation. God's blessings, Moise.
Well, that is weird. So apparently this guy who was supposed to be a servant, this Sam guy who prefers to be called Uncle for some reason, supposed to be a servant. And all of a sudden, he's like taking on these extra responsibilities that nobody asked him to, doing this extra stuff, wants to, you know, be in charge of the kids' education, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to take control of the family's, keeping their books, doing their accounting for them. Mm-hmm. And then takes out what he thinks is fair.
Well, I tell you, I figured
that guy's a freak.
When I first read this, I was thinking to myself, well, Moise must be in a wheelchair or something, unable to defend himself, because why would anyone put up with having that sort of confiscation and control from a big brother that's really just a hired servant? It's like it's almost like a story I heard years ago in grad school about the Chinese. An observer went to watch some Chinese to visit China, actually. Ended up watching some Chinese on the Yangtze River. And he was appalled at the barbaric culture, because he watched as one man sat behind 10 others and began whipping them to make the vote go faster. He said, see, this is the barbarity of this Eastern civilization, he'd written. Only later on he discovered that, in fact, the person whipping the others was hired by the other 10. The reason the other 10 hired him was to prevent some of the ranks from shirking, because they feared their other people, and you know, that they might shirk and try to get away with doing less work. So they hired a guy to whip them. So anyway, we have this kind of event, these kind of things happening in life, but that seems a little bit different here, because it sounds like the guy that's actually doing the whipping now is really not just the servant. He's actually making, you know, all the decisions.
Well, it's strange. I mean, you hire this guy on to do this limited task, and he's all of a sudden like, oh, I want to do this and this and this other thing too. And next thing you know, he's like running your life for you. It's ridiculous. He's supposed to be a servant, not a master.
Well, he's even paying himself, keeping the books. I mean, you know, that's his own wage rate, it seems.
Folks, if I don't know, what do you tell this guy or this lady or this transgendered person? We're not sure with the name Moise.
I wonder if he knows anything about like lethal injection. They just killed this guy in New England, this serial killer. I wonder if there's a way to lethally inject Sam.
Well, apparently they're saying that this servant's family in the past has been guilty of doing horrible things to people that tried to mess with him or fire him or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, that's what it said, and it's really a frightful thing. Moise, we wonder if you'd be available to call in even and give us some more details on just how this transpires. It's just so shocking and appalling to see how this could happen.
We might have someone who has some advice for Moise. The phone number is 201-6955. That is in the 864 area code. For those of you listening in California, about to go out to Six Flags, it's 864-201-6955. We are live from 7:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning. So if you're listening during that time, we are live, and you can call in and be on the station, and you will be a star. You'll be on the radio. All your friends will be amazed. The website we have now is tyrannyresponse.com. That's tyrannyresponse.com.
And that's a nice website. Boy, it's really, really looking good. In fact, we're going to be adding more content to that. All the different ads that we discussed here on the air. Sometimes you're driving along, it's hard to write down the information about different meetings and different groups, but it's all going to be there on the website, so that you always remember tyrannyresponse.com, and you'll be able to head over there and pick up the information. For instance, we have the following ad this morning, which I think is just tremendous, and we'll be putting this up on the website. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions?
Yes.
Try voting libertarian for a change. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they are regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. Our business meeting is at 6:30 p.m., the second Thursday of the month. That was last night, by the way. At Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road across from Greenville Mall. Visitors are welcome. To talk politics, join us for the meetup, 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground, just off of Main Street, downtown Greenville. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network.
Now, I heard you went to the meeting last night, right?
I did.
What happened there?
Well, the meeting was more or less a business meeting, and so we talked about different aspects that the party was trying to accomplish here in the upstate, different themes they've been working on. One of their major themes, of course, which took a lot of time during the meeting, was to support the Tyranny Response Network. We're very grateful that the Libertarian Party has taken such a special interest in TRN, and has produced such high-quality people who are able to provide financial support as well as other kinds of support, technological support, for instance, and people being able to lend a hand. And so we discussed that a fair amount. Also discussed what's happening with the libertarians and how they're trying to attack issues of the left as they rear their ugly head here in the upstate of South Carolina. We have a lot of environmentalist people with the doctrine of the left trying to impose upon private property owners different rules and regulations. Those were discussed and how to combat them. There were many other things that came up, mostly party business and different themes about how they might combat different themes, as I say, different issues that are coming up before the voters, being thrust upon us through the Liberal County Council here in the upstate of South Carolina. So a lot of focus on that, very little focus on the national issues of the day, relatively, but of course other meetings has different themes.
How was the food?
Well, Prime Sirloin is pretty good. Have you been to Prime Sirloin before?
Yeah, I've been a couple times. I will say their dessert bar is far better than the rest of the food. That's, you know, so if you like dessert, they got great desserts there. The rest of the buffet is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean,
but not on par with the dessert bar.
Yeah, the dessert bar really is good. You have to admit that.
Yeah, tons of stuff.
And it's an interesting place to meet, and with, you know, you'll notice that it's one of the few places that allow people to meet for free. We have we have Constitution Party there. We have the Patriots, Carolina Patriots meet there. The Libertarians meet there. The anti-FTAA, I think, is met there. They also meet in Denny's. So Denny's is the other spot that people go to have a free meeting room. But yeah, you end up having a lot of time at the Prime Sirloin if you're involved at all with upstate conservative or libertarian politics.
Yep, and they just got a free plug.
Yeah, well, we try to be helpful to them because they do a great job in allowing us to have meeting rooms. It may interest you to know that there's a politically incorrect, uncensored monthly newspaper that sometimes publishes the Tyranny Response Unit's writing. It's called The First Freedom. And a supporter of this show, Nelson Waller, offers you, or any of our listeners, a free postpaid sample copy of it. Call Nelson at 864-642-4315 if interested. You can also pick up a sample of this fine paper's material at www.gulftel.com/firstfreedom. It picks up where the liberal media leave off. And we want to make a special plug this morning also for the Times Examiner. And this is a great concern of mine. I was speaking to Bob Dill yesterday, and I don't think he'll mind me mentioning to you that the paper has had many struggles over the years, just like in a sense the Tyranny Response Network struggles by being staffed by all volunteers. The Times Examiner has been in existence for 8 or 10 years now, and it's been the leading voice in the upstate for true conservative news and libertarian, pro-life libertarian views. And the paper is on the verge of going out of business. And I'm concerned about that after speaking with him yesterday. Unfortunately, the editor and the staff there, being retired, have not had the time to go out from the regular job, I say. And they're probably, 65, 70 years old. I would assume. I hope I'm not aging you, Bob and Lavero, if you're hearing my voice, but I think that's about right. I know you've been on pension for a number of years. Well, I think it's been very difficult to raise funds that are necessary, and since there were some people who had ads that recently have left the Times Examiner's Admiral because they've gone out of business. Revenue's gone down, and now they're operating at a loss every month. Well, that can't continue for long. I hope that you'll all do what you can to support the Times Examiner, both by starting getting new subscriptions, which are only $25 a year, $27 a year if you're out of state, but also by advertising with them. Give Bob Dill a call at 864-268-0576, 864-268-0576. And pick up an ad in the Times Examiner this week for your business. It'd really be helping out the newspaper and also the cause of truth and liberty and justice here in the Upstate, where the only alternative is a very, very liberal rag, as we all know. So I want to give a plug this morning for you all to listen, read the Times Examiner and subscribe to it and place an ad in it if you possibly can. Again, that phone number, 864-268-0576. Well, I think we're coming up to about a break time. What do you think, Richie?
Yes, I agree. It is about time for a break.
All right. We're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben and Rippin' Richie Williams here this morning. We'll be back in a minute.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Right is right, even if everyone is against it. And wrong is wrong, even if everyone is for it. William Penn. Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported. And here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast. But we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's nppros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.nppros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than to those attending too small a degree of it. Thomas Jefferson.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to the show. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. I'm Rippin' Richie. Today is Friday the 13th, and that's scary. You know what? I actually, one of my pet peeves is Christians who are superstitious about numbers, especially the number 666.
Yeah, what's the big deal about 666, you know?
I mean, it was of course, using the scripture as a way for the people in the first century to recognize a certain person who was giving them trouble back then. But now, if you are scared, if you get, you know, if you go to the grocery store and your total is $66.60 or something like that, that's not Christianity. That's superstition.
Mm.
I actually, with one of the companies I work for, the lady placed an order. Mm-hmm. Turns out her order number was like 10666. She actually called and canceled the order because the order number.
What about all the zeros and ones and stuff like that associated with it? I mean, it doesn't have to be a pure 666 to be a problem.
Oh, I'm sure you come up with. I don't know if they'd have half as much trouble with 333. I mean, I don't know how far they're going to take it.
If it was all ones and twos, you might have twice as much trouble because it all looked like 12s. Like a binary system is doubly diabolical.
Exactly. It was 12, 12, 12. I mean, that's twice as bad. But, I mean, that's not Christianity. That's superstition to be worried about a particular number. Just thought of bringing it up. Friday the 13th, as Christians, we shouldn't be worried or concerned about numbers or days or black cats or anything like that.
Well, I wasn't worried about any of it, so
I know that you weren't,
yeah,
John.
I feel. In fact, I didn't even know today was the 13th, and when I found out, it didn't really bother me that much. Well, at any rate, what else have we got on the agenda for today?
Well, we're going to talk about whether or not viewing politics as left and right is the best way to look at things. We'll talk about some of the latest environmental regulations, and also we'll answer the question, was World War II worth it?
That's Pat Buchanan's wrote about
Buchanan that. Did an article, somewhat controversial. Mm-hmm. Imagine that, Buchanan doing a controversial article. Mm. Interesting stuff to read and to look at.
Sure sounds like it. Okay, well, what should we start with, left and right?
You want to hit one of these? Okay, let's do it. Let me pull up this story. Let's see. This is from Butler Schaefer, Why the Left and Right Are Only Two Wings of the Same Bird of Prey. Now, when we think about politics, we think left and right. Then communism, fascism are supposedly polar opposite political systems. According to this theory, we should stay in the middle and, of course, vote for the lesser of two evils, which, by the way, is still evil.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a realignment of political categories, conservatives mutating into war-loving imperialists and liberals becoming champions of states' rights.
Hmm.
Now, yeah, that does seem strange, but... You know, when the liberals talk about states' rights or the First Amendment or something like that, I mean, they're complete hypocrites for them to come out and whine about their rights under the Constitution when they don't believe, of course, in the Second Amendment, for sure.
Right.
The Ninth Amendment, obviously not. Tenth Amendment, no. Fourth Amendment, no. Fifth Amendment, no. They don't believe in the Constitution. So to occasionally pick out one thing out of the Constitution and whine about it, they're being hypocrites. And now Butler Schaefer here, he proposes using a vertical... system with up and down instead of left and right, vertical with up and down designations in place of the horizontal model. At the upper end would be complete individual liberty, and at the bottom would reside the systems of total statism. Okay, so once again, from the top to the bottom, we're going from freedom to to tyranny. The top we have anarchism, then libertarianism, which could also be known as classical liberalism. Then there's conservatism, modern liberalism, welfare statism, limited state socialism, feudalism, expansive state socialism, fascism, and then fascism/communism. Now, modern liberalism and welfare statism, are those not the same thing?
Pretty much, as far as I'm concerned, they're. In fact, I'm not sure it's that much different than fascism or socialism of any. You're talking about different, degrees of the same thing. Once you get below the conservatism, there.
Well, I mean, modern liberals are for the welfare state and the limited state socialism, aren't they?
As far as I know, last I checked, anyway, we can go to check with Barbara Boxer and Ted Kennedy to verify, but I imagine they would be.
So I think this is correct. I mean, to say to the far right you have big government and to the far left you have big government, government is big government.
Well, I don't agree that fascism is right wing or communism. I think those are left wing doctrines based on
And that's why it's so twisted to say when they talk about Russia that the right wing in Russia is supposedly communist when in America the left wing is communist, and it's confusing. So I agree.
Yeah.
We should look at it differently. Butler continues to say, just to begin thinking in such an alternative way is a value in itself, breaking us out of our well-conditioned mold that encourages us to believe that because we get to vote for the prison warden of our choice, we are thereby free men and women. The standard used to develop this model is the property principle. How is property to be owned and controlled under these differing arrangements? Is property to be owned privately or collectively? Of course, here in America, not many people really own their property because they have to continue to rent it from the government by paying property tax. Every political system is defined by its approach to property. Property and liberty are unavoidably entwined. Liberty is an expression of the decision-making authority one has over his life and other property interests. Fascism and communism share the same level of statist absolutism on this scale. Fascism is defined as a system in which title to property remains in private hands, but control is exercised by the state. Having title to property creates only the illusion of ownership if the actual control resides in someone else. Now, that's true in many cases here, isn't it?
Sure is.
The farmer who has title to his land but is prevented from farming it because it has been deemed a protected wetland has experienced the reality of fascist thinking. So does the homeowner whose title does not prevent the state from taking what she owns through eminent domain in order to build a highway. Now, communist system in declaring the state the owner of all lands is at least more honest and not hiding behind the illusion of private ownership. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. The varying degrees of state socialism are defined in terms of the range of private property to be seized by the political system. Mm. A limited socialist regime might be content to own mines, railroads, airlines. A socialist regime would add factories, broadcasting facilities, housing, and retailing. Of course, now you're probably familiar with the Communist Manifesto, Ten Demands of Karl Marx, I guess it was. Yeah. And many of the things that he talks about on there, we have the same things here, you know, the control of all these different controls and things like that.
Public education.
Yeah, public education would be one of them, and we see
income taxes.
And we should bring it up sometime, the Ten Demands of the Communist Manifesto. And, of course, many of them the Democrats are in favor of, but, of course, the Republicans, they're totally against all of those 10 demands of the Communist Manifesto, aren't they?
Not lately, at any rate.
No, they're certainly not.
I'm not sure they're any different than the Democrats.
Yeah, exactly. They're lesser degrees.
Yes.
The Democrats want to go off the cliff at 100 miles an hour, and the Republicans are, no, let's slow down to 80. Mm-hmm. See, feudalism is a system of land ownership acquired through military conquest, with the king conferring estates upon his loyal supporters. In turn, they subdivide their estates in the hands of their followers. And this formalized system has been transformed into the modern special interest politicking and government contracting practices with which we are familiar. Yes, we are. Hmm. Differences between conservatives and liberals were well defined by Ambrose Bierce, how you pronounce that? I don't know. I'm a victim of public school education myself. He says a conservative is a statesman who is enamored of existing evils. A liberal wishes to replace them with others.
That's great. we need to put that on the quotes page.
That's pretty good. Because, you know, conserve, well, I mean, you think about the name conservative, means to conserve something. Mm. And I'm not sure I'd want to conserve what we have at this point.
No, well, remember, the original word conservative led to one to believe one who wanted to conserve the aristocracy and socialism. Any other place I've been in the world, with possibly the exception of Britain, people, if I'm a Spanish-speaking country, they call me a liberal. And it really offended me when I was first down there being called a liberal. I said, no, I'm really more conservative. You know, so no, you're not conservative. You are a liberal. Of course, this was years ago before I would even pin on the libertarian tag. But for those people, anywhere else in the world, the idea of liberal is the idea in the classical sense of being a liberal, John Locke, Thomas Jefferson, those kinds of people. Here in this country, the term's been hijacked. And for us, actually, conservatism does take on a different meaning because we are conserving, we could say, a true conservative, the principles of the founding fathers, the themes that were addressed at the American War for Independence. You're conserving those things
rather
than the old way. So it is different here in America. We're unlike any other nation in that sense. But I digress. Go ahead.
Well, and you know, I've heard from a foreigner who came to this country illegally, I might add. And since he'd heard in his country that democracy is better than communism or whatever, he thought that the Democrats here were the party he should vote for. Yeah, of course, that's not true.
Did you educate him on what the difference is between a republic and a democracy?
I think that I was at the table when this conversation was taking place. It was actually a pastor, and I believe my pastor did give him some education on that and help him see the light.
Good.
Let's see. Neither group shows, talking about liberals and conservatives, neither group shows any consistent respect for individual property interests, each having its own priorities for the plundering of the many for the benefit of the few. And, of course, here at TRN, we're opposed to corporate welfare just as much as any other type of welfare. Libertarians advocate a limited government restrained by a written constitution. More conservatives and liberals tend to see the constitution as a barrier to their objectives. But libertarians have a sincere commitment to individual liberty. All right, we're coming up on a break. It's 8 o'clock, Friday the 13th. We're live from 7:30 to 9 a.m. right here on TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. So you can call in and be on the show if you're listening in the morning. Phone number 201. 201-6955. That's 201-6955. We will be right back.
The Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Contemplate the mangled bodies of your countrymen and then say, what should be the reward of such sacrifices? If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude than the animating contest of freedom, go from us in peace. We ask not your counsels or arms. Crouch down and lick the hands which feed you. May your chains sit lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that ye were our countrymen. Samuel Adams.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
The ultimate result of shielding men from the effects of folly is to fill the world with fools. Herbert Spencer, English philosopher, 1820 through 1903.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We want to make sure that my microphone is on. I'm going to check with our production staff because it doesn't seem like it's coming through my earphones, and when that happens, it doesn't seem like it's actually on. So
I think you're on, buddy.
You think I'm on? You can hear me through your earphones?
Yes, I believe I am hearing you through the earphones and not just from the room.
Well, all right, okay. Well, we'll go ahead and go on. We'll forge ahead here, believing that we've actually got that.
Have faith, brother.
All right. Keep the faith. Currently 66 degrees in most parts of the upstate South Carolina. Going to get up to the high 70s today. Going to be clear skies all the way till later in the afternoon, especially around Anderson. You're going to get a few thunderstorms moving in, and we're going to have thunderstorms this evening. So you might want to be prepared for that as you make your way on out to work. Glad you've joined us this morning on the Tyranny Response Network. I want to remind you of some great things that are going on along the way this week, as we always do. Don't forget, first of all, to go to the Institute on the Constitution next week. If you want more information about the Institute on the Constitution, please go to the website. We have all the information you need there about attending the Institute for the Constitution. Now, our website is
TyrannyResponse.com.
It's a great website. It's already getting chock full of information. That Institute for the Constitution meeting is up there, isn't it?
It will be in a couple hours.
Oh, it's not on there yet? Well, we got
it. Well, the thing is, I don't have it in an email. I've got to type it all out from the paper.
Do you have a scanner?
The old fashioned way. I'm not going to put it in there with a scanner.
Really?
That's the ghetto way to
do it. Can't you just like put it in a scanner into a text file, into Word, and then you'll have to type it in?
Oh, well, you convert the scanned document into actual letters?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and I don't have that technology. I don't have a scanner right now.
Really?
I have to type it. That's why I haven't. Okay. That's why it's taking me a little bit longer.
All right.
Well, unless you still have the email somewhere you could send to me.
I don't think I ever had an email. I might have. But this would be weeks ago. And that's
yeah,
garbage
now. These paper documents, I mean, that's arcane. That's old-fashioned. That's too much for me to deal with.
Well, we definitely want to encourage you to go to the Institute on the Constitution. Also, check out the front page, policyofliberty.net, and look down to the Liberty Minute section. There's a couple recordings there. We think that you should listen to before you go to attend the Institute on the Constitution. The Institute on the Constitution is in Pelzer, South Carolina, at 203 Ina Marie Lane. Ina Marie Lane in Pelzer starts at 6:30 on Monday and it concludes around 8:30. Be sure to go. And if you have to get there a little bit late because you're driving in from a distance and family duties make it so you can't get there right at 6:30, don't worry about it. Just get there when you can. But at any rate, the couple of Liberty Minutes that are worth listening to are one which is called Christian Views on Rebellion, Highlighting the American War for Independence, and the other is called Self-Defense and Christians, or Christians and Self-Defense Against Criminals, Including the State. Yes, the state can be a criminal. In fact, can you, this is your riddle for the day, not riddle, your trivia question. How many times can you name, or when in the history of the world, have you found that the state has not been involved in criminal activity? Talking about the state here, not talking about good limited government, which rarely happens either, but the state. When has it not been involved in criminal activity? Well, anyway, there's a couple things there for you to listen to. Listen to those before you attend the Institute on the Constitution on Monday evening.
Yes. All right. Are we ready to jump into some of these stories?
Go right ahead.
We've got the latest environmental regulations that Dr. John's going to bring us up to speed on. Let me mention the phone number to call in, 201-6955, 201-6955. If you want to bring up something that we talked about earlier in the show, that's fine. We will go back to that and discuss that if need be. Area code 864-201-6955. You can be on the show. We're live from 7:30 to 9 o'clock. Weekday mornings. So if you're hearing us during a weekday morning, we are live.
Well, we had a number of stories that had been mailed to us from the Tyranny Response Network research staff, and I'm just trying to catch up on a number of these. A lot of the ones related to environmentalism are interesting. For instance, Austin Farley, who's our good friend over at the Political Cesspool radio show in the Memphis area, is involved in introducing an industry into the Memphis area that could help clean up the air. Clean fuel technologies, emulsified fuels are made from water and petroleum products such as diesel, naphtha, number six, fuel oil, and asphalt. The blending of water and petroleum into a stable emulsion is a result of the chemical reaction of our proprietary additives and passing all three fluids through blending units. Liquid petroleum fuels are injected into the combustion chamber as droplets of varying sizes. Because liquid fuels can only burn on the surface, larger droplets do not fully combust and remain as carbon deposits or discharge as particulate matter in the exhaust. Okay, we're getting a little bit of a chemistry lesson here today.
Yeah, that was just the most confusing thing I've ever heard on talk radio.
It was, wasn't it? We're gonna have to reprimand the research staff and also the hosts for reading something without just trusting that it was going to be intelligible.
Now, what combusts? What was that?
Let's skip it. Let's not even go back there.
So the bottom line is that this guy has come up with some way to increase fuel efficiency.
Well, we're gonna read that. This is the highlighted part. See, the whenever I get an email from the research staff that's highlighted like this, I know it's important, and I try. And actually, the part I just read, he didn't highlight. Which means that he's probably saying to himself, you know, John, I didn't want you to read that confusing part, just this other part. He says this.
I don't understand.
When our emulsified fuel, now emulsified, that's a big word. It just simply means to mix oil and, you know, water or whatever, right?
Okay.
To mix two things together. I think that's what it means. You know, not being a chemist and all, I'm not sure. And having gone to a public school, I've always had that as an excuse, as you do, for anything debilitating in my mental makeup or knowledge base. When our emulsified fuels enter the combustion chamber, their water content flashes into steam, which shatters the surrounding petroleum fuel into microscopic droplets. These microscopic droplets of fuel have a much larger surface, which burn more rapidly and more completely, producing less smoke, soot, and particulate matter. So the bottom line about this one is somebody's come up with a way to burn fuels more cleanly, and therefore the environment could be better. Now, Now, what's interesting to us is, will this product ever get to market? Who has an incentive to have clean air? Have you ever thought about that?
An incentive? I mean, everybody wants clean air.
Do they?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, everybody wants clean air. Some people, I mean, just like everybody wants to be thin and in good shape, but some people want a hamburger more.
You know, this is actually not true. There are plenty of people who want dirty air, and I'll tell you some examples of who wants dirty air. People who are bureaucrats at regulating air quality. What would happen to them if the air quality was all of a sudden clean?
Okay, you're saying that they want it as job security.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. And there are other people, too, that want
it. I mean, those people are freaks. They're not normal people.
Well, that's we agree there, but we have to admit that there are freaks in the world, and there are people who like dirty air. Also,
in other words, people that actually have, they're getting some kind of
economic benefit.
Financial benefit from the dirty air.
And it could be people in corporations and so forth. It's the same question about crime. I mean, if you ask a cop, an honest managerial level lieutenant or above cop, do you want to eliminate crime? They're honest. They're going to say no. They do not want to. They want to control crime. It's very different to say I want to eliminate or control crime. Why would a cop who has his whole livelihood based on the existence of criminals want to eliminate crime?
I understand. Well, I understand, yeah. Now, of course, but with like a corporation, you could say that if they have a factory or something that they want dirty air. They don't want dirty air. They just want less expensive production costs.
Correct. And so their profit will be maximized. Now, if this particular technology were actually useful and a corporation could maximize profits, it wasn't going to double their costs of making a carburetor or whatever that's entailed here, they would be in favor of it because they would be able to claim their car is environmentally friendly and so forth and then be able to go from there and pass that off to the public as them being a socially conscious firm, build their goodwill in society and so forth. So even if it cost them a little bit to get that goodwill, they would undertake it. But when it costs them a lot of money to make a change, then they're reluctant to do so because, after all, they're not into maximizing air quality. That's not what they're in business for. They're in business to make a profit.
Well, you know, I guess if we didn't have these bureaucracies, then you wouldn't have these people that would benefit from the dirty air.
Well, that's right, and the point is this is precisely that. See, people do have in general an incentive to have cleaner air. That's the non-freaks, as you put it. Many people have that incentive. However, most people are not willing to complain about it simply because it's not worth the cost to them. And it's simple cost-benefit analysis. It may take off, you know, 15 minutes off their life in some places, unless they live right in downtown L.A. or somewhere where it's really bad and it takes off 5 years. But for most people, dirty air is not that big of a deal. It's not worth a lot of hassle to go out of your way to write to congressmen or to write to a company and tell them how you hate them because they're, you know, polluting the air and so forth. For most people, they just don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. They live in the city. Instead of living out in the middle of Montana or whatever in the countryside where there's just pure air, because there are benefits to living in cities. There's, like, jobs there. There are Christian schools there, or even, you know, better public schools, as they call them, or some people fancy in their notions. There are hospitals there. There are places for retirement homes. There are all the services that cities provide, a great used car market. You could name 100 things that are benefits of living in urban areas. Well, one of the costs of living in urban areas is smog or dirty air or water that's not absolutely pure flowing from a brook out of a Colorado mountain. I mean, but people give up those pleasures and benefits in order to have the benefits that cities bring.
Yeah, you know, I think the pollution thing is temporary to our period of time. I mean, I think the technology is going to overcome that at some point. Now I wonder what would it be like without these government regulations. I would think that people's private property rights would find a way around excessive pollution, wouldn't you?
Well, what happens is if a property were purely free, you would end up having cleaner air in the long run. In the short run, you have dirty air. Simply because, again, people prefer to live with the dirty air as long as they can have the higher incomes and enjoy other things. But as time goes on and their incomes continue to rise, then all of a sudden, instead of having that extra, you know, Mercedes parked in the driveway, or extra yacht, or even an extra skateboard, whatever it is, they're going to prefer to put a few extra bucks towards cleaning the air. And it's going to start out by them cleaning their own air as much as possible. You know, they're going to buy these filters for the house that shoot out these, you know, ions and so forth, and then whatever that happens, it cleans the air inside their home. So doesn't make their environment perfect, but it's better than before. They're willing to spend some money on it. And what will happen is, as their incomes continue to rise, people will begin to spend more as a percentage of their income on cleaning the air. And over time, markets will provide a very good air quality. What you have when government tries to clean the air, or the state, is a creation of a bureaucracy that has an incentive to not go away, as we talked about. And so you reach a crisis point, the air is black, you watch the air moving, you know it's not foggy, and you realize there's a real problem here. And so what happens is people start screaming and yelling, we need government to help us solve our problem. And so the government steps in with its rationing programs or whatever it is and says, if you don't got an X and a 1 or 3 on your license plate, you can't drive on Wednesday. And, you know, if you have a Q and a P and an R, then you can, you know, drive on Thursday or whatever it might be. And the air does get cleaner, but as this is a restrictive thing, obviously, it impinges on our liberty. It's a behavior modification kind of scheme. It's a Big Brother act. And what it essentially does is take people down below the critical point where they complain. So the air is just bad. Not really, really bad, but just bad. And at some point, it begins to get too good. And the bureaucrats know that it's getting too good. And so they decide that they need to let that air be a little bit dirtier so that they have a reason for existence. This is true of all bureaus that face what we call in economics perverse incentives. It's also true for drought boards. They have a harder time. I mean, California drought boards are great because they'll go 3 years in a drought and people will be loving these people. We need to have a government drought board to prevent, you know, water shortages. And then all of a sudden, you know, you'll get this huge dump of rain in California, you know, 80 inches when they only get 10 a year, and water, you know, dams are bursting and all this stuff. And, oh, this is a temporary situation. Let's not forget the other 3 years. They have a harder time justifying their existence because they have to depend on the weather. But they all act the same way. They have the same perverse incentives to try to maintain their jobs, and they do so. So at any rate, there's a little bit of an economics lecture for you. We'll come back to a couple more of these interesting environmental issues when we come back. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben and Rippin' Richie Williams. We'll be back in just a second.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Lord Acton.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian Worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking and will soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
I contend that for a nation to try to tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket and trying to lift himself up by the handle. Winston Churchill. This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're glad we're mesmerizing our listeners this morning. Yesterday, the phone wouldn't stop ringing. Lots of callers yesterday, and today you're just silent in awe as you're hearing the truth on the Tyranny Response Network.
We don't know
network.
For sure that phone's really working.
We don't? Our phone's not working. Producer, check the phone.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you know that it's working this morning?
Well, I don't know. So let's see. I don't know. Why don't you check it out and make sure it's working. 864-201-6955. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find there are regular people like you concerned about the site the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. Our business meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at Prime Sirloin on Windriff Road across from Greenville Mall. Visitors are welcome to talk politics. Join us for the meeting at 8 p.m. of the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's Cafe Underground just off of Main Street downtown. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you, sir, for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network.
The Nationalist Times is a politically incorrect monthly newspaper that has reported on the progress of the Christian Worldview program since it began. TRN listeners can obtain a free postpaid sample copy by calling Nelson at 864-642-4315. Visit the Times website, anu.org. Mention this ad for a big discount on your subscription. The Nationalist Times picks up where the liberal media leave off and salutes Dr. John Coben's pioneering broadcast work.
And we appreciate that. Well, we're talking about perverse incentives and bureaucracies, and the research staff astutely forwarded me a previous article that came out in March 1996, almost 10 years ago here, in the Freeman, Ideas on Liberty. The Freeman, by the way, is a must-read. You should have that coming to your home every month. I think if you're a student, it's $10 a year. So if you're a parent or an adult, I think you have to pay $30. So make sure you put it in your kid's name and save a few bucks. Go to fee.org and sign up to get the Freeman. It's a great, great deep thinking magazine. If you like liberty and the vision of the founders, you should have that coming to your doorstep. Well, he says in this article, and who is it saying this, by the way? This article is by Raymond J. Keating. A warning: OSHA, that's the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, can be hazardous to your health. And he says this: as is typical with government agencies brandishing impossible missions, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, has become a burdensome regulatory body, seemingly more concerned with pushing paper and imposing fines rather than in establishing safer working environments. Indeed, since OSHA's first month in existence in 1970, when it instituted 4,400 job safety and health rules, the agency has played the role of adversary to American business. I'm skipping through the article, obviously can't read the whole thing. There is substantial evidence that OSHA has strayed far from its much-touted educational advisory and cooperative relationship with business. Indeed, OSHA's concern for real safety is lost in a bureaucratic and regulatory haze of citation quotas, tax collection, and remarkably inane regulations. For example, OSHA imposes an incredible amount of paperwork burden on the U.S. businesses. In 1994, 7 of the top 10 most frequent OSHA citations were related to paperwork. OSHA has perfected the government make-work scheme, generate a paper blizzard of regulations, and then fine businesses for not complying. It's another way of taxation, by the way. If you don't want to tax people directly, you just call it a fine. You need some more loot, get some more money out of them. Well, you accuse them of doing something wrong, fine them, much like driving a little bit over the speed limit would be, and collect a tax, a traffic tax or an OSHA tax or anything else. Anyway, getting back to his article, such a development reflects the arbitrary and subjective nature of OSHA citations. With the 1990 budget deal, OSHA stepped up its role as a revenue collector for the federal government. Skipping down a little further, unfortunately, in the midst of all the talk about government reinvention, OSHA has been busily preparing additional regulations, and if implemented, such regulations will cost tens of billions of dollars annually, translating into fewer resources for investment, employee compensation, and job creation. At any time that an OSHA inspector comes into one of our facilities, one businessman says, any businessman would say, it's probably the first time they have ever seen a large commercial printing press. In our plants, where the presses are 100 feet long and 3 stories high, the OSHA inspector doesn't know where to start. In every case, the inspector will invariably find a guard off or some other minor, readily apparent violation, but will pass by process equipment which, if it failed, could blow up our facility. Because they are not experts in the industry and they cannot know the critical issues we deal with on a daily basis, our informal conferences end up being training sessions on safety and the printing industry to the local OSHA offices. They do not know our industry, yet they try to cite us as if they do. And I'm sure that's the case in general.
So you get these idiot bureaucrats that come into a business like this, and they don't even know how this equipment works or anything, and they're walking around trying to find something they can get some money out of them for.
That's right. It's eluding
job security.
And it's the economic theory would point to two aspects of why regulation always fails. The first one we talked about earlier in the show, and that's perverse incentives. Why police men or drought or smog bureaus do not want to eliminate their foe. They want to simply control it so they can maintain their job. That's a perverse incentive, what we call public choice economics. The other is what Friedrich Hayek called the knowledge problem. That's what this OSHA article brings up. People who are in bureaus do not have adequate social knowledge in any particular field in order to properly regulate. So even if they had angelic natures, they would fail to do what's in the public interest just because they don't know enough. And so they're going to step into this this guy's company that who has the printing press, for instance. They're not going to have a clue what's right or wrong or dangerous or not dangerous, and the industry is going to have to educate the guy on it. But still feel like he's doing something important and doing his job. He'll slap a few fines on him for insignificant things and make him fill out some paperwork, tear away some of their the benefits they might have, tear away some of the income they might have that could be used for reinvestment and creating new jobs and increasing the capital base, and instead just siphoning it off for government waste and bureaucracy. So there's, again, a little part of the economics lesson. A Christian needs to be a thinker, and we are a Christian worldview trying to help you think better as a believer. Always look at any regulation and think about this two-pronged critique. First of all, the lack of knowledge or the knowledge problem that regulators have. And second of all, the perverse incentive problem that they face always because of their pursuit of self-interest. Did you know there's still some people out there, Richie, who actually believe that there are such things as true statements that statesmen who deny their own self-interest in favor of the public interest, they subordinate their desires and wishes and desires in life in order to promote the interest of the social good. And that if you find some of these people, these magnanimous, altruistic kind of people, you can actually have a beneficial system of politics and so forth that will not prey on people, and people will not abuse political offices for their own power. People believe that, even though the Founding Fathers didn't believe that.
Most of those good, decent people you're talking about have real jobs.
Yeah, well, I may, perhaps.
Now, back to the OSHA thing. I mean, you'd think that without OSHA smacking fines on people, these businesses would have no other incentive to keep the area safe. I mean, do you think otherwise businesses don't care if their employees get killed? I mean, what about their insurance?
That's right. Insurance does do a good job regulating. Companies are very concerned about their reputation. And anybody who believes that you need government regulation to make things safe is simply misinformed. There are accidents that happen generally in markets, and with or without government regulation, you're going to have accidents. There's no question about that. But businesses do not like to have accidents. They don't want to reduce employee morale. They don't want to cause hassles socially so that people hate their business. It's not in the business's best interest to do that. And so you frequently will have businesses going out of their way to make people happy. Look at the phenomenon on eBay. You use eBay, don't you, occasionally?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's this thing called feedback, right? You get a negative or a positive feedback score.
That's fantastic.
And people, this is if you buy something from somebody and they rip you off, you can give them negative feedback. Or if they do something badly to you, you can give them negative feedback. Well, this is such an important feature that people are very concerned in eBay, the sellers at any rate, of guarding their feedback score. And so if you threaten that you're going to give them negative feedback, they're going to bend over backwards before that happens to try to resolve the problem so that their feedback score stays as close to 100% as possible, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think the government should actually provide those ratings.
Yeah, wouldn't that be helpful? Isn't it amazing, though, in the free market? Let's not be too facetious here. The free market, eBay is the free market, as far as I can tell. The reputation standard that they set for grading firms and the quality of sellers is so excellent that we end up having people going out of their way to try to serve and please consumers.
Well, the thing at eBay is exact same thing you had back when we lived in small communities. Mm. I mean, back when people lived in small towns or rural areas, if the local blacksmith did a lousy job, everybody's going to know it.
That's right.
Because everybody knows each other. But now with eBay, they've done it through technology because you can rate it. So it's the same thing you would have had anyway in a smaller community.
It's a great point. When I was doing my dissertation, which was on building regulation, market alternatives, and allodial policy, one of the things I had to do was go and find out how they graded building quality. And one of the big questions was, because there are a number of places in America, Pennsylvania is one of them, by the way, and many counties in the rural areas, you do not have any permits necessary. And people would say, they like a gasp. Well, how can you have quality buildings in areas where there's no building regulation? How do you know that the builder won't shirk? Well, there's a lot of people out there, folks, who can swing a hammer, unlike other professions. A lot of people can do that job. And if one guy gets a reputation as being a shoddy builder, guess what? He's done. He might as well move to another county because people are not, they're going to hear about this guy and they're not going to use his services anymore. And he's going to go at great lengths to protect his reputation, especially when there's so many competitors or potential competitors.
Well, the person who's interested in buying a house can have that inspected. I mean, they pay someone, a house inspector, to come and inspect that and make sure that it's going to hold up for them. And if the inspector can tell it's not going to hold up for them, then, you know, that house may not sell. And there you have the, you know, private, you know, without the government intervention, that situation is taken care of.
Isn't it interesting that even though it's government inspected, people don't rely on that? They still prefer to have a private inspector come in addition to the government inspector?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I don't trust the government.
Well, we've come up against a break here, and we're still mesmerizing our audience, as we frequently do on the Tyranny
Response
Network.
They'll look up there now.
Oh, there's somebody calling. We're going to have to wait till after the break. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben and Rip and Richie, and we'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. It is May 13th, Friday the 13th, and it's about 8:34 a.m. If you're listening between 7:30 and 9 a.m. to the show, then we are live and you are able to call in. The studio number 201-6955. That's 201-6955. Our website is tyrannyresponse.com. That's tyrannyresponse.com. We got the weather and then we have a caller. John Coben with the weather.
No, let's not forget, that's the 864 area code in case you haven't memorized the area code for the upstate of South Carolina and you live out of state. You probably should, because this, yes, you know, is such an important part of the world here, and we think so anyway. We're here. But it is 864-201-6955. Questions or comments may be sent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to questions@policyofliberty.net. The weather in the upstate is in the mid to upper 60s at the moment. Going to get up only about to the upper 70s, maybe 80 degrees today, says the Weather Service, with a chance of a thunderstorms moving into Anderson area in the late afternoon. And in the evening, we're going to be having thunderstorms throughout the upstate. So be prepared for that as you make your way on out to work today.
Well, we can take a call.
I think we should take a call. He's been waiting a long time. He called right before the break, and it's Nelson on the line. Welcome to the show, Nelson.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good show. Good show.
Thank you.
I was intrigued by the discussion about what people, our public servants, are really in the business of doing. And really, I think that what you're trying to get at in your agreeably diplomatic way, Doctor, is that they're all in business. They're in it for themselves. I won't say all, but I really feel it's the vast majority at all levels of government now, including, well, almost down to the local dog catcher. My county, my city, are run by political demons who have no regard for the general public that pays their way.
Thugs. It's thuggery. Political thuggery. It's legalized thuggery, I should say.
Political thuggery. That's what it is. Yeah, they have no... I mean, all we have to do is look what they're really doing to us. It's no less true in Greenville than it is in Anderson either, I'm sorry to say. Just look what they're doing and think of how much they're charging us for it. And I think anybody will have to see that they live on a different planet than we. They have entirely different goals than we, and they are... nothing but, what is the phrase you quote for us so often, the chief
parasites
thug in a particular overdressed gang that is plundering us. And just, I think they laugh at us. I think it's a great amusement for them how, what chumps we are over it.
Yes, well, and maybe, and perhaps we are, especially because we don't kick them out of what they're doing.
I think, Richie, if I may say so, at this point in political history, and of course in many, many other ages that have come before our own, it's not a matter of being cynical anymore. No degree of cynicism is enough to adequately cover the sinful venality of the situation, right from the White House level on down. Oh yes, and also the levels of government above the White House and the Pentagon and all that.
Now when you're talking about...
I wanted to ask you, Doctor, about the... Foundation for Economic Education that publishes the Freeman. I've been aware of it for some years, and I know they're in Irvington, New York. I just looked at their site. They operate out of a big old mansion that I guess they've turned into offices. It's a beautiful thing. Don't you agree that it's unusual for something like that to be located in a very lap of luxury in the same county, Westchester, in which the ultimate Yankees, Bill and Hillary Clinton, bought their Northern Hemisphere mansion?
Well, I think they're just thankful that back in the 1920s or 1930s, when the person with the big estate there decided to donate it to him, I don't think they necessarily chose that place. It's just that it was given to them. It's a big mansion and so forth.
Obviously, the taxes on it and the upkeep are going to be phenomenal, and I think it's a beautiful thing. What amazes me, though, is the fact that people who think that way, like we do, would have their particular base right there, almost literally within sight of New York City.
Yeah, it's just tradition.
It's just such an alien environment for our purposes normally, and not just because we find the weather cold and the human climate frigid, but because it's, the bastion of liberaldom, for crying out loud. You know what I mean?
Well, and in some sense, it's good to have a few outposts like that within enemy territory. I mean,
it's absolutely wonderful. I'm just curious as to how it came about. I don't suppose you have any idea.
Well, I think they just have a donation, as I said, of someone's estate back in the 1920s when Albert J. Nock and so forth had began that whole organization up there. And that wasn't just Nock. There were a number of others. And they just received their endowment, and part of it was the property they're on. They've been there since the 1930s, as I understand.
My goodness,
So.
Well, wonders never cease. Anyway, carry on the good work. You guys are much more interesting than I am. Richie, I hope you'll stay on a lot longer than 1 week. I think this might even be the best option, having you as co-host. That's my impression so far.
Well, I appreciate
that. Have a great
day,
gang.
Thanks a lot.
All right, see you, Nelson. Well, I'm going to make one other comment about what Nelson had to say. I'll jump in here because Nelson brings up a good point of economics that needs to be followed up on. And some people, again, wonder, well, This is a Christian worldview show. You spend too much time on economics and too much time on public policy. Well, no, we don't. Part of the Christian worldview, well, part of it is my own bias, because my training is in economics and public policy. That I'll grant you. If I was trained as a biologist, we'd spend more time on the Darwinian themes, for instance, I'm sure, than these that I know of and familiar with. The problem with that is that many Christians today, in fact, the vast majority of Christians today, are completely ignorant. They walk around as ignoramuses, following along after the Pied Piper of the Republican Party or whatever their favorite talking head is, and believe a bunch of nonsense. And if they simply knew something about economic theory, for instance, some basic things about economics that anyone can understand, even without a calculus class, they wouldn't need to have, afflicted with all the public policies that they effectively vote for themselves. A good example recently was this Put Parents in Charge Act, which so many lamented because it didn't pass. It was a bad bill. It was a bill based on faulty economic principles and on sly and clever underhanded principles to undermine the homeschool movement. But anyway, I digress here because I want to go back to some economic principles, help you understand them today, and think better as a Christian. We want you to be a deep-thinking Christian, or even if you're just a person who's not a Christian, wants to love and loves liberty, and we need you to think deeper as well. Some of you may know the founding father of economics, a man named Adam Smith. And Adam Smith purported a number of important doctrines in his book, The Wealth of Nations, which he published the same year that our country declared its independence, 1776. So he was a Scottish man, Adam Smith, wrote that book, The Wealth of Nations, as well as The Theory of Moral Sentiments, and a number of other tracts and articles that were of very great importance back at that time. And one of the things Adam Smith said is, he said, look, the baker does not bake his bread because he wants to feed Paris or society. He bakes his bread because he wants to promote his own self-interest, not because he's selfish, but because the way God made him in his own makeup is that he looks out to provide for his own needs, to provide for his family's needs, food and shelter and so forth. He doesn't actually go to work in the morning thinking that he's going to benefit society. But in fact, the fact that the baker is out there means that he is benefiting society, that you can go down and buy a loaf of bread and exchange your gold or silver or your pigs or your chickens or whatever it is and get something else is a benefit. And so one of the miracles of economics is, you can call it a miracle, is that even though we have depraved people who might be selfish, who might not be, all people pursue their own self-interest economically, yet there are social benefits to such a self-interested pursuit. And this is a fundamental idea of economic theory. Well, it changes a little bit for many people in the political science arena when it comes to politics. Because the opinion of many is that once you go through the ballot box process and become elected as an official, you change. You no longer serve your self-interest as the baker does, who bakes his own bread. You decide to serve the public interest. You subordinate your own goals and motivations and drives for power and success and money or whatever else there might be in favor of things that would benefit society at large, as if you are some sort of godlike creature who can stand up in an omniscient role and benefit other people and know exactly what they need. This is a myth that was exploded by public choice economists in the 1980s, and it died hard. It's only now come into mainstream textbooks as even a possible theory, because in the entire discipline of political science and many other disciplines, including sociology, vastly affected by this in a detrimental way. We do not need most of these pagan or leftist theories simply based on the fact that we understand the self-interested nature of man. Now, I'm carrying on a bit here, Richie, and I hope you don't mind me hogging here for a minute to talk about this theory, but Nelson brought up such a good point that I want Christians to get a grasp on, that people are self-interested, even if they're not selfish, even if they're Mother Teresa-type altruistic. They're still pursuing what they think is right, their own self-interest, and by doing so, they benefit society, and the ballot box doesn't change that. If you've got politicians in office, they're still going to pursue, as the dog catcher in Nelson's story, their own self-interested motivations and goals, and maybe mock us if we think otherwise.
Well, that's true. You know, George Washington's farewell address, he talked about the importance of religion and morality. And how that, you know, especially people, I believe he's talking about people in government as well, need to be guided by that. So that's why you need, politicians who have a Christian worldview, who believe in right and wrong, and who act accordingly instead of just act according to their own selfishness. So we truly need good, moral, right-thinking Christian men as political leaders. It does matter, because otherwise they're just out for whatever they can get out of it.
But the theory is that no one will ever be able to overcome the self-interested nature. I have to be careful here. We're not talking, selfishness and self-interest are two different things. A selfish behavior, we know, is a sinful behavior. A self-interested behavior simply says, I'm going to look out for what I think is necessary to promote my own well-being. It doesn't mean, or not my own well-being, what I think is the most important thing in life. It might be building orphanages, in the case of Mother Teresa. It might be preaching the gospel and not taking a salary. Those are self-interested motivations, even though others perceive them as being selflessness. They're still self-interested because you're doing what you think is the important thing, the right thing, what God's called you to do, whatever it might be.
So I guess we have to be careful about what the interests are of our politicians.
Well, the interests of politicians are always going to be self-serving. That's why our Constitution was, and our framers were very careful to rein in the state and put checks and balances on people, because they knew that given free rein, these people would eventually give in to what we have today, a total tyranny against the freedoms of people.
Well, absolutely. The Constitution was a way to limit the government. Unfortunately, at this point, the American people are not holding the politicians accountable to stick to the Constitution. That's why we're in this mess we're in now.
Well, I think we're coming up to a mid break here. Boy, the show is already coming to a close. When we come back, we're going to have to talk about what else we promised we would talk about today, which is a Pat Buchanan story, I think. And if you have a call, please do get on the line and call us at 864-201-6955. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and joining me as my co-host today is Rich and Rippy William. I can't say your name right. I'm sorry. Rich and Rip. You take it.
Rip and Richie.
Thank you.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Right is right, even if everyone is against it. And wrong is wrong, even if everyone is for it. William Penn.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know, that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported. And here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S, as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals. That's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than to those attending too small a degree of it. Thomas Jefferson.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
We're providing that roughage for your brain this morning, aren't we? We're mesmerizing the audience with economic theory and other things today. Well, let's switch gears here, Richie. What's our last story about?
Well, Pat Buchanan did an article wrote a piece that caused some controversy here. Asked the question, was World War II worth it? That's like blasphemy, isn't it? You know, Bush went over there to Russia recently, and in the Bush versus Putin debate on World War II, as Buchanan calls it. Putin had a difficult assignment, defending Russia's record in the Great Patriotic War, that's in quotes. And Putin said that, quote,
That's what they refer to World War II as, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess so. Putin said, our people not only defended their homeland, they liberated 11 European countries. So, do you think that these people, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Poland, East Germany, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, and Finland consider themselves liberated?
Well, they do now, but I don't think they did under Stalin. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Exactly, not under Stalin. So, I mean, the Red Army, of course, pillaged, raped, murdered its way westward across Europe. And Bush actually called him on this and set the record straight, which is nice, but there's more things that need to be set straight about World War II. Before that, we have a call, apparently.
I think we have a call.
Another call?
Wow, this is good.
Caller, you're on the air.
Who are we speaking with?
My name is Jan.
Hello, Jan.
I called yesterday. I wanted to get you right after the break, but I was a little slow on the draw. Sorry. I just wanted to bring up, we're talking about how Christians are so ignorant and that we need to be careful of, you know, what views our politicians hold and stuff like that. But I just wondered what you thought as to why Christians remain ignorant. What do you think motivates them in their self-interest to remain ignorant that way? What are they interested in about that motivates them to not seek out what to do or to remain in ignorance like that?
Well, that's an excellent question. Of course, there's really a two-pronged response to this. One are the simple character issues. We have complacency, and all of us, we have a tendency to be lazy. Those are, and you're thinking it's hard work. Let's face it. It's easier just to ask somebody what to do who you trust than to actually go and think about it yourself. And that's fine to some extent. I mean, that's why we have newspapers and news sources, and that's why people can, who aren't good thinkers on their own, can actually learn from others. There's some sense in which we need that, but there's also a sense in which there are some character issues where Christians just have had poor character traits in doing the diligent work they need to. The other is, and I think this is maybe even far more important, is our great enemy, the public school. Most Christians, unfortunately, have been subjected to the indoctrination program at the government school, and this has led them astray from having a Christian worldview, which thinks it's important to understand things about economics or natural science, and instead deludes people with all sorts of foolish nonsense like Darwinism and socialism and environmentalism babble, feminism or alternative lifestyles, all these kinds of things, as well as being affected by the mass media and Hollywood to a large extent, so that Christians now believe things that are simply piped down to them through the media. And, of course, we're trying to do the same thing, our Christian worldview.
Well, do you think, I agree with all that, but do you think a lot of it might also be what's being taught in our churches, for example, which I guess goes to a topic a couple of days ago, where you're talking about what preachers can say and what they can't say and what they mainly focus on from the pulpit.
Precisely. That was actually going to be my third area, is the whole problem that church education has become mealy-mouthed and not deep thinking itself. People are not willing in churches, pastors specifically, to stand up and declare the truth. And when they are preaching, they're not willing to get too deep because, hey, people need a seeker-sensitive environment. But Richard, maybe you have a comment about that. You know a bit about seeker-sensitive Christianity, eh?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I'd say, think about this. We have different types of Christians. We have Christians that are in it just because it's tradition or because they're going to church to see and be seen, number one. We've got Christians that believe that Christianity is for the heart only. It's, you know, you say the prayer, you get saved, and then you do your own thing. You know, Christianity is only for the heart, and only the spiritual things matter. And then you have Christians now that believe that you know, Jesus is a card-carrying Republican, and that you know, whatever the Republican Party says or does is right, and you back them no matter what. So we don't have many Christians that are really understanding these issues and that act accordingly.
And the appalling ignorance is, it's just growing by leaps and bounds year after year after year.
And that's why we're here, John.
That's right. Trying to take off the veil of that's masking Christians from seeing the truth. So Christians are completely ignorant of history, which is really a travesty. It's sad. We should be the leaders in history and science, and hopefully one day again we will be.
We should rightfully be the leaders in all aspects of business and the arts and, well, just everything that applies to life. We should be the standard that the rest of the world needs to achieve to.
We should lead by
example.
And
unfortunately, we're not. It's a sad, sad thing.
Well, it's a great...
At home school, we're raising our children to take their rightful place.
Yep.
Yes.
Homeschooling is the way to get things back in line.
Yeah, the homeschoolers are going to really take over here as time goes on. They're going to shine like, you know, brightest stars in the sky, basically. I think they already are in many respects, but it's only going to get more and more as time goes on, especially as the public school continues to be degraded. Appreciate the call this morning, Jan. Excellent comments.
Thanks a lot.
Glad you're listening.
That's good work, guys.
Keep telling other people about TRN, okay? And the Christian Worldview.
Absolutely.
All right. Well,
bye-bye.
Well, we've got about 6 minutes left. Is there anything more you want to read in that? That's pretty good stuff.
Well, that was a great call, and it brings us to the most really important points. This article we're reading about World War II, I think we should take this up again at some point in the future, because this is a lot to think about, because you're raised thinking that, I mean, whoever would think that World War II, that our actions may not have been the right thing, or things may not have been done the right way.
Well, we know they were wrong as far as having an alliance with Stalin. It was wrong to elect Franklin Delano Roosevelt to begin with, and then the alliance with Stalin was absolutely absurd from a freedom point of view. It isn't absurd when you consider that Roosevelt was America's fascist, and it made a lot of sense for him to be aligned with Stalin and his policies. But that picture, them all sitting there.
You're talking about Uncle Joe?
Yeah, Uncle Joe. All sitting there at Yalta with Churchill and FDR and Stalin. That picture still hangs in my memory. And just thinking what a tragedy it was to be involved there. People who have not been to Eastern Europe do not realize how much destruction was done to those people's environments, lives, properties, and so forth. It was appalling. That's one aspect of it. The other is we've been lied to a lot by historians, revisionists, the victors write history. We've been lied to about the war between the states or the war of Yankee aggression. And we've been lied to about other wars. And one of those includes World War II, some of the things that were going on during that period.
Yeah, and that's stuff you'll never, ever hear in the public school. And it's something that we should think about. I mean, was it really necessary for it to go down the way it went down?
Yeah. There's another article that relates to that on antiwar.com, behind the scenes, commemorating a world war by Justin Raimondo. He says that the commemoration of the end of World War II is being used to announce the commencement of World War IV is just another one of those little ironies the Bush administration seems to delight in. The president's five-day four-nation journey, which he takes into Latvia, Holland, Russia, and the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, quickly took the aspect of a proselytizing trip in which George W. Bush went door-to-door, so to speak, with his message of spreading freedom around the globe, quote, freedom, unquote. It was in Riga that the thematic coloration of his journey to the East took its most vivid hues. Instead of focusing on the defeat of Nazism or the U.S.-Soviet alliance, he took out after the Russians and the post-war Soviet occupation of Europe. For much of Eastern and Central Europe, he averred in the speech in the old city's small guild house, victory brought the iron rule of another as empire. Well, yes, thanks to the U.S.-Soviet alliance and Franklin Delano Roosevelt's enthusiastic cooperation. But to the astonishment of many, the president not only acknowledged that, he also tried to atone for it, atone for Roosevelt. Can you imagine? Here's what he said, and then I'll stop reading this one. It's too long an article to do the whole thing. This attempt to sacrifice freedom for the sake of stability left a continent divided and unstable. We will not repeat the mistakes of other generations, appeasing or excusing tyranny and sacrificing freedom in the vain pursuit of stability.
Wait, is this the same Bush that has all these nice relations with Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, I think it's the same one. It's the left side of his mouth speaking now instead of the right side. Or who knows, maybe he speaks out of other parts of his body. The guy is just a bone.
And whose father had some kind of deal with Hussein?
A little bit of hypocrisy, I would say.
My goodness.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there are lots to be questioned. Warfare is a horrible thing. It's not the Christian worldview is not pro-war. Folks, if you're a warmonger or one who likes war and you think you're a Christian, you're making a mistake. Jesus Christ came that wars eventually may cease. War is a horrible, brutal thing in which men created in the image of God are destroyed. Their lives are destroyed. Families are uprooted. Property is destroyed. Things are rocked by war. Now, we should be in favor, I think, as Christians, of self-defense. When we're invaded by thugs and tyrants, even when they're our own elected leaders, we should favor self-defense against them. But to actually
we're not pacifists.
Yeah, but to actually favor war as an ideal, something that's not neat, to actually go and shoot and kill and maim and destroy, is not what Christians should stand for. So we want to make a careful distinction for that. So I advocate peace whenever possible in the world, and I'm not afraid to take up arms against thugs. I'm just saying that that's not the ideal. That's not what I shoot for.
Yeah, I try to avoid war whenever possible.
whenever possible. It's an awful thing, a terrible tragedy in the history of the world.
Yeah, and especially don't make alliances with evil men, evil leaders that are going to end up always results with bad things happening.
Sure. Oh. Well, what do you think? It's been a good week, Richie, I think.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed co-hosting this week on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and hopefully maybe someday I'll come back and do it again.
Well, we'll have to keep you on our regular schedule. Maybe just once a week, or you know, there's a time where our production staff will be gone from mid June to late July. Maybe we'll have some more co-hosting time, and then, and maybe even there's some thoughts too about doing your own show too in the afternoon on TRN.
There has been talk of that.
Yeah. So we'll see. That might also be great. That way you can not only be stimulated in the morning, but also in the afternoon. And we hope that something good will come out of that.
Don't forget about our website, tyrannyresponse.com. That's tyrannyresponse.com. Go ahead, John.
And don't forget, we're needing some people who are interested in helping with the transmission of TRN. If you've got a place that you can help out with and are interested in promoting the signal of TRN around the upstate or elsewhere, let us know. Also in need of computers. If you've got an old computer, you can donate it to through the Integrity Group. We'll get it to TRN, 514 Pettigrew Street. Drop it off there. For those of you interested in meeting with us at California Dreaming, we'll be there about noon today. Be happy to talk with you then and meet you. We usually have a good conversation informally about public policy issues every Friday at California Dreaming. Well, this is Dr. John Coben with Rippin' Richie Williams.
I did it right.
Signing off for today on Christian Worldview. Until Monday morning, God bless you.
Have a nice weekend.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.